The time is now 6 o'clock. Lehigh Valley Discourse starts now.
To pass beyond is what I seek. I fear that I may be too weak. And those of you who've seen it through, to glimpse the other side. The promised land is waiting like a maiden.
No, don't turn the channel, folks. I know you think you're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse with Alan Jennings as your host. That's true. But if you're wondering about the awful music being played, it's because I'm playing songs that Ed Pulowski likes. And I wouldn't play that song under any circumstance if it wasn't for my friend Ed Pulowski, who was perennially late, and he just ran in. He's going to be out of breath. But he's looking awful lot like looking like a mayor today. And Ed, way to go.
You don't like Kansas, do you?
I hate Kansas. Ed Pulowski is on a winning streak. The Neighborhood Improvement Zone, authored and shepherded through the state legislature by Senator Pat Brown to provide powerful incentives for redevelopment of two key pieces of Allentown, is driving well in excess of $500 million in new development. His proposal to cover the unaffordable pension obligations for city retirees by leasing the city's water system to Lehigh County Authority generated more than $200 million. The Philadelphia Phantoms will be joining the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs as the top minor league franchises of the Phillies and Flyers, respectively. His election to a third term as mayor is all but assured, since he secured enough write-in votes to be the candidate on the Republican side, as well as his spot on the Democratic side. This guy is a gutsy, take-no-prisoners, I-really-don't-care-what-you-think type of politician. Ed, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
How do you get
away with it? Great introduction.
How do you get away with it, really? I mean, you know, you're almost the anti-politician in that sense. You know, that people want to hear what they want to hear, and so many politicians are more than happy to tell them what they want to hear, and that's not your style. How do you pull that off?
Well, you know, I approach it in a very simple way. I think that, you know, good politics is good policy, and good policy makes good politics. At the end of the day, if you do what's right and you actually have good policy that's for the betterment of your community, that, you know, the majority of folks will actually support that. I think too often we, in our culture today, especially with our media culture and our, you know, social media culture, and we get wrapped up in the political world that we're basically looking to, you know, have instant gratification. And I tell folks, you know, if you want instant gratification, being mayor is not your job. You know, go run a pet store, because but don't become mayor, because you have to come to a point where you realize that no matter what you do, there's going to be a certain percentage of the people that are going to like what you do, and there's going to be a certain percentage of people that aren't going to like what you do. I mean, if I pave a street, you know, 50% of the people on the street will say thank you for paving my street. The other 50% will say that damn mayor, he's paving my street, now I can't park on it. You know, so you get to a point in your political life if you're in an executive position like a mayor long enough where you realize that you're never going to please everybody. You have to have policies policy positions that you feel are going to move your municipality forward, a project forward, whatever. And 99% of the time, if you do the right thing and you have a policy position that's doing the right thing, I believe that good policy ultimately turns out to be good politics.
You're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. By day, just about every night and every weekend and every minute of my life, I'm the executive director of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. Once or twice, sometimes three times a month, the radio station is kind enough are crazy enough to give me this microphone in order to bring public affairs issues to the smartest radio listeners in the Lehigh Valley, the kinds of issues that I think are important. Tonight, Otto Bast is here volunteering. I think he sort of got stuck volunteering. But Otto, thanks for being here.
And he probably won't like my playlist either. And
I think the executive director, Bill Dotremont Smith, said I was prohibited from playing some of these songs. But I'm one of those
really
defiant kinds of guys.
I didn't think they were that bad.
I'm jealous that you play drums. Did you take formal lessons? I did.
Yeah. When I was growing up, you know, I started about 5 years old. I don't know why. I just gravitated towards drums. I got my first set, you know, I was 5 years old. My parents got me this little tiny drum set. And
patient people.
They
hearing
obviously
impaired.
Were. Yeah. Probably. They were, you know, my parents had me when they were older, so they might have been at that point. You know, I just gravitated towards it and stuck with it and played all the way through, you know, grade school and middle school and high school and got involved in all kinds of different bands and jazz bands and
did
rock
bands.
Did
you wear one of those dorky band, high school band
I did. I did. I did.
Were you like the
But you know what? Band? I was a terrible I hated marching band. I could drum really well, but I can't, like, walk and drum. Huh. It's like I can't, you know, I can't walk and chew gum at the same time, you know, I started getting involved in all kinds of, you know, jazz bands and fusion bands and rock bands and
you know, it's sort of antithetical to being a politician. I mean, the drummer is this guy that's back in the back, sweating like crazy, working his tail off, usually working harder than anybody else in the band. Few people know their names. They don't know who they are back there. They're like ogling the lead singer, and, mm-hmm. and you know the lead singer's got groupies and everything
yep,
else.
Yep.
It's kind of weird that a guy who's as successful an elected official as you are would be a drummer. Frankly,
you're probably right. That hard work also makes me. You know, I try to bring that same sort of energy, and you know. Discipline and determination to my job as well, which I think also makes me in some ways a good politician too, especially for the role that I have as a mayor. I mean, you have to be, you know, you have to have sort of this ongoing energy to be a mayor of any large city in America now, because there's so many challenges that are thrown at you almost every single day. But yeah, you're right. I mean, naturally for me, quite honestly, I mean, I never thought I'd end up in politics either. I was not, you know, I was not an outgoing guy. I was more of an introverted guy growing up. I learned over time to be a lot more extroverted. Mm. That is not my, you know, my normal tendency, if you will. It's something that, you know, now I couldn't stand not to be in a room and talk to people and, you know, shake hands. But that was not me for most of my life. That was something that was learned, and in my times when I'm by myself, when you know if I'd rather just be alone in a room.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There are times when I have to, you know, revert back to my sort of, you know, introverted self and just get away from people because really deep down inside me that's
you're an introvert.
You know, I'm an introvert.
It's funny, you know, I look back at my report cards as a kid, and every class I took, I had that little number that said disturbing influence on the class.
I can see that.
So
it doesn't surprise me in the least.
I'll bet it doesn't. A few weeks ago, the radio station asked me to be a guest DJ and talk about the song and play the songs that are the most relevant in my life. And it was, mm-hmm. you know, pretty introspective. And I had a lot of fun actually thinking through how I would use six or eight songs that represented things that were important to me. So I asked the mayor to give me the six songs that are relevant in his life, and I'm using those songs on this show. And Ed, you and I agree on a lot of things, most things, but I got to tell you, I hate some of the songs I'm playing.
Yeah, I know.
For
I figured you would. It's okay. I've heard your playlist too. I don't particularly like your songs either. So.
But
it's okay. We could agree to disagree.
Yeah,
on,
we're going to have to
on
this
song.
One. But the first song was The Wall, and that's Kansas.
Yeah.
What's
actually? I thought it was fun actually trying to figure out six songs or seven songs to and talk about why they were meaningful in my life. The Wall was you know that was early on. I mean that was early on. There is a sort of an epiphany song. It's about you know facing. This. If you listen to the words, it's about your life coming to like a turning point. There's a wall that you mm-hmm. have to get over this wall. And for me, that was in you know in my early college years at the end of high school, really taking a life changing course in my life, getting rid of some of the destructive behaviors that I was sort of a path
you
that
too.
I was on. Me too. I know that was for you as well.
Yeah.
And The Wall was one of those songs that just sort of resonated with me at that particular point in my life. It was sort of that epiphany moment where I realized that I had to sort of change the course and direction of my life, or I was never going to get sort of past that wall that I had built in front of me and really never really amount to anything.
Hmm. Was there a seminal moment in your life that defined the way you look at the world? I mean, was there some kind of turning point? I mean, it sounds to me like maybe this was it. But, I mean, what was it that framed your values and made you the Ed Pulaski that is, you know, running the city of Allentown?
I think in many of our lives there's many pivotal moments. You know, there's many defining moments that we look back on and say that was, you know, one of those pivotal moments within the course of your life where it sort of shapes your view and shapes your perception of the world. For me, that was one of them. You know, I mean, it was profound. For me, there was a religious, you know, component to it. But it was a component that helped to change the course and direction of where I was heading. And quite honestly, it really sort of reshaped my life in a way that... that I don't think I'd be here unless I had that sort of pivotal defining moment to say, hey, I'm going to stop this destructive behavior that I was on. I'm going to change the course of my life and go in a different direction. And, you know, as Robert Frost says, that path made all the difference. So
you're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. And tonight we're talking to Ed Pulaski, who I think is a pretty interesting guy, and you know, I'm talking about some things tonight that are a little bit different. You know, we'll get into some of the public policy issues, some of the battles that Ed's in the middle of. But I also thought it would be interesting to talk to Ed about, you know, who is Ed Pulaski and what makes him tick. Really, to be a good leader, you have to have a thick hide and some pretty serious self-confidence. And you know, you kind of almost have to be willing to stand up in front of people, like take all of your clothes off and say, this is me, you know. And mm-hmm. I mean, it takes some serious guts just to stand up in front. I mean, there are a lot of people who won't talk to more than three people at a time because they're scared to death of audiences. So, you know.
And as I said, that was me growing up. I mean, I was that person. So for me, it was being able to have, you know, getting that self-confidence within myself and then being able to almost learn, sort of relearn, you know, my own personality and my own habits that sort of restricted me from being able to have that thick skin and being able to bare my soul in front of people as you're suggesting. I mean, that doesn't come natural to me, and it didn't come natural to me. It did something that I developed over a long period of time. So you can't change, you know, your personality and your persona. It's not easy, I'm going to tell you that. But yeah, that person that you're talking about, that was me.
Mm. You know,
I could have never dreamed that I'd be up giving a speech. I mean, I would have never thought that in my early years, that's for sure.
You know, I think
I was the drummer sitting behind
that's
the drum,
right. You know what I mean? I think this is maybe your third or fourth time on my show, and listeners should know that I don't give my guests you know, any kind of real idea of what I'm going to talk about on the show until they get to the studio. And because Ed perpetually runs in here at the last minute, he hasn't had a chance to see what kinds of questions I'm going to ask him. And so I'm going to ask you a little bit of a curveball question.
Okay.
Given the need to have that kind of self-confidence and the thick hide, Rather than ask you what you think you do well, I'm curious about what you think you do poorly. Other than play poker, I think you're a pretty lousy poker player, but...
You're probably right at that.
but I like it when you play.
Yeah, I know. That's because I'm a pretty lousy poker player. What do I do badly?
How about control your public life so you don't, when you go on vacation to Mexico, you don't call me on Sunday morning?
Yeah, I don't do that very well.
I'm always amazed.
And one of the things that I always catch myself that I think I need to do better, you know, and I think a lot of people are this way, is really listen. You know, I listen, but you know, I hear so many voices all day long, mm-hmm. that being able to really soak in what folks are saying, you know, I have to actually constantly, continuously push myself to say, no, I got to stop and listen to what this person is saying, what they're trying to convey to me. Even if I don't like what they're saying to me, they're saying it to me for a reason. And being able to absorb that and really hear them is something that I continuously push myself on, because the tendency, I think, for all of us, especially someone who has an introverted personality buried inside, is if somebody's throwing something at you that you don't like to hear, just tuning them out. And that is a struggle for me that I constantly try to make sure that I'm paying attention to what you're saying, and that I'm absorbing it, and you know, really understanding the issue that you're trying to present to me. And I'm not going to say that I've mastered that, but it's something that I've become much better at over the years, and it's something I continuously struggle with. And of course, my time. You know, what I mean, I'm one of these guys that, you know, gives 100% to everything. So
yeah, you are.
You know, just like you. You know, when I had destructive behavior, I did 100% destructive behavior. You know, I'm just very passionate about what I devote my time to, and being able to constantly balance that out, and also give time to my family, to my kids, to be able to tune out. You know, when I'm working on at any given point in time, that's always a struggle, and that's something I continuously struggle with.
How does a Polish guy from Chicago move to Allentown and within 10 years or so become mayor of a fairly xenophobic city? I mean, it's not like we have a large Polish constituency. You know, it's pretty much Pennsylvania Dutch and Latino. How did you pull that off?
That's a darn good question. I'm not sure I have the answer to that one. I love the city. I came here after I received my master's in urban planning and public policy. I was looking for jobs across the country. We looked at a number of locations to move to. This was the one location that me and my wife could both agree upon. So I took it as a sign that this was where we were supposed to be. Took an organization, as you know, that was nothing. We rebuilt it, and I really got a passion for.
You were very entrepreneurial.
The city of Allentown, and I live in Center City. I've lived there for the last 20 years. You know, and I really fell in love with Allentown, and I think that translated as I got out there on the campaign trail. As you know, I fought a very difficult primary. There was four or five people in the primary who were very established Allentonians.
Right.
My first election, I won against a guy who was a two-term mayor. Whether you liked him or not, he was still, people liked him enough to vote him in two terms.
Well, he certainly had name recognition.
A lot more than I did at that particular point in time. And, you know, won pretty handily. And I think
I think it says a lot about Allentown.
I think so, too. I think the city's changing.
I mean, I think the Latino electeds that we've got, they're not getting elected by Latinos. They're getting elected by Anglos.
That's true.
You know?
And I think over the course, if you look at the census data over the course of the last 20 years in the city, it has changed dramatically. And it's mostly people from outside the area, even from outside the state, that are moving in to the Lehigh Valley and moving into Allentown. And that's changing the perceptions. It's changing the motivations, political motivations,
I think I don't know if it's all for the bad. I think it's actually pretty good to have this new influx of folks that have ideas that say, hey, we're open to change and we're open to some different progressive thoughts.
Yeah, I think it speaks well of Allentown. Real quickly, we've got about maybe a minute. The next song is Frank Sinatra's I've Got the World on a String. Why?
As I said, you know, my parents, my mother had me when she was in her late 40s. They said, you know, that I wasn't a mistake. I don't believe them. because of that, I grew up with fairly old parents. I mean, you know, I was growing up with a family who was in their 60s, really, when I was, you know, growing up in my teens. And this was a song that my dad loved. My dad loved Sinatra. And so every time I hear Sinatra, I think of my dad and, you know, I think of my family.
Cool. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on listener-supported community public radio, WDIY. We have the mayor of Allentown joining us tonight. Stick around.
Life is a beautiful thing, as long as I hold a string. I'd be a silly so-and-so if I should ever let it go. I got the world on a string, sitting on a rainbow. Got the string around my finger, what a world.
WDIY is proud to partner with the Celtic Cultural Alliance, presenting their summer fundraising concert featuring Barley Juice and the Glengarry Boys at the Sellersville Theater on Sunday, July 21st at 7 p.m. You'll be dancing in the aisles and counting the days until the 2013 Celtic Classic, September 27th through the 29th. More information available at CelticFest.org.
Job. The man in a silk suit hurries by as he catches the poor old lady's eyes. Just for fun, he says, get a job. That's just the way it is. Some things will never change. That's just the way it is.
We're back on Lehigh Valley Discourse, listener-supported community public radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. I have a single guest tonight, and that is Ed Pulowski, the mayor of the city of Allentown, who's got one hell of a win streak going on with some, I mean, not like, this guy isn't playing small ball. These aren't, you know, bunts and, you know, hit and run and you know, we're talking some serious home runs and he's always an interesting guest. That Was the Way It Is by Bruce Hornsby. I really like that song a lot.
You like that song?
I like that song a lot. And in fact, I've used it on the show plenty of times. What is it about the song that...
Well, you know, again, it was another seminal moment in my life, sort of a pivotal moment. I had come out of college. I had gotten a job as an organizer, community organizer on the south side of Chicago. Was working with...
Barry Obama?
No. I wish I would have been a cabinet member. We actually were in the same area at the same time. We just never ran into each other. It became one of those times when I realized that my life wasn't going towards. I actually started working in Cabrini Green, which was a huge housing development, which is now gone.
It's now a Hope
6 neighborhood. And running a Big Brothers Big Sisters program, and then got into tenant organizing and ended up working with a coalition of churches on the south side. But it was one of those times in my life where I realized that, you know, I looked at the injustice that was happening in the world. I said, you know, to myself, I wanted to make a difference to change that. I wasn't going to pursue money, and I wasn't going to pursue fame. I was going to pursue a career that really made a difference in people's lives. And I remember that song, and that song always brings back those type of memories to me.
You got here, you know, homers left and right, and some of them are grand slams. One of which is the Neighborhood Improvement Zone. There are very few cities in America that can boast $500 million plus in development, and you've got it going on in a big way in Allentown. How are you doing with that? I mean, you pulled off a heck of a trick. How do you make it stick? And you got an emergency, I hope, not on your...
No, I'm telling my wife where I'm at.
Lisa, he's in the studio with Alan Jennings at WDIY.
Go ahead.
My guess maybe is that Lisa, like my wife Denise, is the one that probably saved your butt from herself, because the women in our lives usually are the ones that are the, you know, the responsible, you know, mature people that keep us from being stupid.
This is true. You were talking about the NIS.
So the NIS. Where is it going? I mean, you've got more projects coming.
You know, the sky's the limit. It is really a unique zone. It's probably the most unique zone in the country. It allows us to capture state tax, all state tax, for the next 30 years to be used for both public and private development. It's already spurred over $1 billion of investment in the downtown. We have about 1 million square feet of office space going up, over 3,000 new jobs. Of course, the arena, which is not just a hockey arena. It's going to be, you know, multi-purpose for concerts and trade shows and circuses and Disney on Ice and everything else that goes along with major event arenas, as well as a hotel, new hotel, and, you know, all kinds of businesses moving and relocating back into the downtown with housing. We also have the riverfront as well, which we haven't even begun to tap.
The $1 billion that you cited, because I've usually heard $500 million.
No, it's a billion.
The billion must include the riverfront.
No, it doesn't. The billion doesn't include the riverfront. There's $250 million just in the arena block alone.
Right.
That's not even counting the three or four other buildings that are being built, as well as other development that's already taken place or starting to take place, like Boots building. The Boots Corporation has added on another 50,000 square feet to their building. That was $18 million. You have the Schoen's building, which has sat there vacant for decades, which mm-hmm. is going to be redeveloped. That's going to be a $22 million project. When you start adding all this up, it gets into the billions. You're looking at probably about 3,000 new jobs coming into the urban core. We have 1,200 construction workers working right now, which is unprecedented. I was actually kidding Mike Nutter the other day. I said, you know, we have three cranes up in Allentown. I only saw one in Philadelphia.
That's good.
in fact, we had four up the other day. So, you know, it really is an amazing turnaround. And when you look at the even just the buildings downtown and all that's happening around the arena and the arena block, that's only about 15% of the NIS zone. I mean, there's still a lot of land left and a lot of opportunities for development. The waterfront is about 80 acres. We got Neuweiler Brewery, which is going to be redeveloped. Ruckus, which is a company out of New York. They make a bunch of boutique beers. They're going to, put it right back to a whole new brewing facility. They're going to have a tasting facility there, if you like.
You got to love the name, Ruckus Brewery.
Yeah,
man,
I mean, they
cool.
have all, yeah, they have all hedonism.
It was funny, and, you know, when they came before the committee.
Optimus Prime beer and Redding beer. And
before they came before our
names.
Committee for the project review, you know, the guy, he's a Lehigh graduate.
Yep.
And he's like 27, you know, and he's all serious and, you know, trying to act like a grown up.
Right.
And I'm thinking, man, you're bringing us a beer, you know, a brewery called Ruckus Brewery. You
yeah.
know, you can let your guard down a little bit. I think I'm on to
yeah,
you.
They have
know?
About 30 labels, but, you know, and they're doing good. They're going to brew about 250,000 barrels a year of their own stuff and then contract out another 1 million barrels. So it's going to be a full service brewery with about 400 new jobs. And then, of course, you got the other development plans that were just put forth by Mark Jandel and Dun & Twigger. And that, you know, that could be another $250 million. So we've just begun to see the development, that potential that's occurring within the NIS. We can't forget all the infrastructure. We got American Parkway Bridge, which that people have talked about for literally 50 years. I saw articles dating back to 1950 about talking about when we're going to get this bridge. It's under construction. I think it's the only fully federally funded bridge in the state of Pennsylvania under construction. That's another $60 million. We're redoing our 8th Street Bridge, our 15th Street Bridge, which is another $16 million project, and the 8th Street Bridge is going to be under construction as well. So all our major arteries coming into the city, all our major bridges as well. I mean, there's still a lot of great things happening simultaneously.
The idea of making sure that the neighborhoods come out better off is not something that just us, activists are talking about. I mean, I've had lots of, very staid, conservative, corporate types of folks saying, Alan, you can't bend. You got to make sure that there's resources for the neighborhoods. Where is that effort?
Well, it's ongoing, as you know. I mean, that you're on this board. It's not like there's a pot of money. And I think that's the misnomer. There is no pot of money that we can utilize for anything outside the NIS zone, okay? Right. In fact, there's no pot of money that we can use in the NIS zone either. What the NIS allows you to do is for a developer to utilize state tax dollars. So let's say you bring a company in from New Jersey and they're paying $1 million of state tax. They still pay the $1 million of state tax. What the NIS allows them to do is capture that $1 million and utilize that for debt service. So the biggest component for development, right, is financing. And so what the uniqueness of the NIS is to give us, it's really a tax increment financing zone. But instead of using property tax, you're utilizing state taxes, which are much more lucrative and generous, to basically finance these projects. That's the uniqueness of the zone. So there is no pot of money that we can technically utilize to affect these neighborhoods. So we have to be very creative in how we go about not only simultaneously developing new buildings within our downtown, but also affecting the surrounding neighborhoods. I care about this deeply, obviously. I live in one of those neighborhoods. I live on 11th and Linden. I've lived there for the last 20 years. In the old Allentown neighborhood. And so what we're trying to do is figure out ways that we could leverage these dollars, work with the new developers who are coming in to pledge dollars to things like, your organization and others, Community Action Committee, who are working within the neighborhoods. I forget the tax program. Neighborhood Partnership Program. Utilize that to actually leverage even more dollars to be able to help with blight remediation and home ownership and business development in some of these neighborhoods. Also putting in infrastructure into some of the surrounding neighborhoods, like on 7th Street, which is really sort of a commercial neighborhood commercial district, putting in new lighting and infrastructure. And those are the things I think government does well and that we can help facilitate. Yes, I as well as, public safety improvements, the weed and seed area, community gardens, making sure we have enough affordable housing for folks, cracking down on absentee, landlords, all those things, I think, combined is what's going to change these neighborhoods. But I think the greatest thing is all this infusion of cash that's coming in as a result of all the new development will have a ripple effect. That if we control in a positive way, will have a positive impact for decades to come on some of these surrounding neighborhoods.
I live in a city. Although I'm a little bit further into the West End than you are, I'm proud of the fact that I put all three of my kids through Allentown schools. I don't know if people realize you've got two very bright kids that are in Allentown schools. I think the elementary school was it McKinley?
It's McKinley. McKinley
and the middle school is Rob.
And then my daughter's going into Allen this year.
And I think that speaks volumes to your commitment. I mean, the fact that you
and McKinley live on the other street. Really an urban school. I mean, it's a small little school that's right on 9th and Turner. It's clearly a neighborhood school. And my kids that are great education there. They have a great principal and they have great teachers.
But, you know, let's go back to the schools. You talked about the impact on the neighborhoods. What people don't realize is all these properties in the NIS zone are still on the local property tax rolls. And so as these buildings get built, we're looking at several million dollars a year for the city that's going to come back that we can use for extra police and infrastructure improvements and everything else that we do as a municipality, but also close to $6 to $7 million a year starting in 2015 for the school district. That's huge because that's going to benefit everybody across the city. So you're looking at it, you know, the school district came out, I think, 3 or 4 months ago and said, if you look at their structural deficit, it's almost $12 million a year. Or I'm sorry, it was like $14 or $15 million a year, something like that, some of that range. You combine that with what Pat Brown was able to get in an increase in basic education subsidy for the school district, plus the money that we're getting from the NIS, you're making up that deficit. And that's something that I think is critical for building and sustaining, you know, solid neighborhoods within the city of Allentown. Because as you know, even in your neighborhood on the West End, as soon as folks, they have this perception of our school system,
I'm not sending my kids to Trexler, unfounded.
Yep. But as soon as they get to middle school, they move out of the city. In fact, I was about a year ago, I was at Panera Bread on the West End. And since I don't spend a lot of time with my kids, I try to at least take them out for lunch.
That's nice on a
Saturday. So we were going out to, she wanted to go to Panera Bread. So you know how Panera Bread has that you're standing in line to get your food, and there's also tables right there. And I heard two women talking, and you know, like, well, have you moved out? No, I haven't moved out. Have you moved out? And they caught my eye, and they looked up at me and said, Mayor, it has nothing to do with the city. Our kids are going into middle school, and we're moving out. And I thought, my gosh, you know, here's two middle-class families. I don't know how to control that. I mean, you know, and it frustrates me as mayor because I have no control over the school system whatsoever. But I realize that our destinies are linked together, that if we don't do something to support the school system, we're never going to have solid urban neighborhoods that are going to attract middle-class folks to not only move back into, younger folks to move into, but to stay there and raise their families there.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Guest tonight, Mayor Ed Pawlowski from the city of Allentown, who's done some pretty impressive home run hitting he's now at the end of his second term. The other big home run just this year is a $220 million deal with Lehigh County Authority. You did it to rescue the city from the stranded cost of, unaffordable stranded costs of the city's retirees. What next in that deal? I mean, what do we have to look for?
We have to finalize it first. It's almost there. I mean, we'll be finalizing it shortly.
And all that money's up front.
Yes. And what we did, you know, I mean, the reason we did it, let me back up just so people have understand the context. We have a huge pension problem. In fact, it was gobbling up everything within our general fund. We were going to go bankrupt, even with all this development happening, the NISs and everything that you see happening downtown. Allentown was fiscally, its structure was collapsing in on itself. And it was collapsing in on itself because the way that pensions are structured in the state of Pennsylvania, you have what's called the minimal municipal obligation. That's the money you have to pay every single year to basically the minimal amount to pay into the pension fund. Now, that doesn't take away any of this pension debt, this unfunded pension liability. It's like the minimal payment on a credit card. Well, that kept growing and growing and growing. Since we were never paying off the debt, the amount kept growing and growing and growing. And most municipalities are in this position. For us, it was getting to the point where when I came in 2006, that number, that MMO number, was $6 million. Because of all the early retirements of contracts that were negotiated, you know, before I even came into office, I lost almost two-thirds of my entire police force and half of my fire department to early retirement. That pushed up that unfunded liability tremendously. And that MMO number went from $6 million to $23 million this year, going to $25 million next year, to $28 million, to $30 million, to $32 million. So we cut budgets. We cut over 20% of our workforce. You know, we got a revenue sharing agreement with Bethlehem on Casino. All that money was just basically going in to fill in the gap that kept growing and growing every year. By 2015, that would have been 30%. Think about it. 30% of our entire revenues, of our entire general fund, would be going just to pay pensions. Now, all of our property tax, okay, the line item, I mean, we have lots of taxes, okay, that go into the revenue for the city. But just the property tax line, that only generates about $28 million a year. Our pension costs were going to be more than our entire property tax revenue. Wow. We couldn't sustain that. So we needed to do something that would address this issue. We looked at selling assets, which I really didn't want to do. And then we looked at leasing assets. We did a very competitive process. We got very competitive bids. And thankfully, we actually got the county to bid as well. And we talked about regionalization for years. Ironically, years ago, I think like 10 or 15 years ago, when we first started talking about regionalization, they were going to offer the city like $25 million, which I looked at them at that point. I said, you know, I'm Polish. That doesn't mean I'm dumb. You know? I mean, it's worth a lot more than $25 million. It was, obviously, through a competitive bidding process, we got $220 million. We're going to eliminate our unfunded pension liability. That number, that $28 million number, is going to drop down to basically zero. So all that money comes back into the general fund, which helps us pay for more police and improve our parks and everything else without having to raise your property taxes. And we saved every single job.
And the amazing thing to me is...
We saved every job, which people don't understand. Every single person that worked there got their same job, in fact, better. In fact, there was a big argument that all these folks are not going to go with the LCA or the new company. They're going to stay with the city. You know how many people stayed with the city out of 100 employees? Two.
Huh.
Two.
Well, and the thing that amazed me is you projected $220 million, I think, didn't you? And
we did.
You got $220. Yeah. That blew me away. I mean, because everybody was saying, he's crazy. He's not going to get that number. So you pulled.
Yeah, I remember that too. Everybody,
yeah.
And I said, no. I mean, we did our analysis. You know, we looked at similar systems across the country. We had some of the best engineering firms and financial management firms working with us. We did our homework, and we knew exactly what we would. And the other thing that we did that was unique, which no one else has been able to, you know, we looked at everybody else's mistakes across the country. And their successes. And we incorporated the things that we thought other municipalities did well. We made sure we didn't make the same mistakes other municipalities had made in the past. And one of the things that we did was different is we did a lease up front. So we outlined all our parameters and what we wanted. They had to take our entire collective bargaining agreement. They needed to make sure everybody had a job. We had a rate regime that was actually lower than what you're paying in rates now going into the future. And honestly, Alan, I didn't know if we would get the $220 million. In fact, I was sweating bullets the day of the bids coming in because I thought, what happens if no one
100.
Bids on this thing? You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
We ended up getting four good, solid bids and it has solved our problem, and we're going to be probably the most fiscally sound city in not only the state of Pennsylvania, but maybe in the country.
We're going to take, we've got to hurry into the next break. You're listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest, Mayor Ed Pawlowski. Stay with us.
Send a letter on a long summer day.
Listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. Lehigh Valley weather currently 82 degrees, overcast skies. We're expecting a cloudy night overnight, a low around 64 degrees with a chance of some isolated showers. Tomorrow, a continuing chance of isolated showers. Tomorrow's high around 80 degrees. We'll get right back to Lehigh Valley Discourse after this.
Hey, it's us, Click and Clack from Car Talk. Is your car so environmentally incorrect that it creates its own ecosystem?
Donated through the Car Talk Vehicle Donation Program.
This station gets the proceeds and you get a tax break.
To find out more, call 866-789-8627.
Car Talk airs Friday night at 6 p.m. and Saturday at 10 a.m. For more information, visit our website at wdiy.org.
Run like moths, we drift into the city, the timeless old attraction, cruising for the action, lit up like a firefly just to
Okay, okay, that's all I can take. It's Rush.
I figured you wouldn't like the last two songs at all.
So, but Ed, we did Wheel in the Sky. That's Journey.
Yeah.
Subdivisions by Rush. Yeah. What's relevant about the two?
Well,
songs?
Wheel in the Sky. I picked that because my second child, which is my son Alex, when he was being born. Now I hate needles. I have a real phobia to needles. Mm. Okay. And we were sitting in St. Luke's, Allentown, and they have a birthing center there. And my wife was, after like 20 hours of labor, decided that she'd finally take the epidural. So I'm watching the epidural go in, and I start to faint. Okay? And all I heard was, you know, and you're not supposed to tense up, and she's trying to hold me. And all I hear is the nurse saying, honey, just let him go. Just let him go. So I'm laid on the floor, right? And they're trying to wake me up as my wife is giving birth. And all I heard was Journey. In fact, I was dreaming that I was at a Journey concert.
Oh, my God. That's torture.
And Wheel in the Sky was on. And so every amazing. Time I hear Journey, I think of my son being born.
Wow. And amazingly, your wife trying to, you know, hold on to you when she's...
Yeah, she's a trooper.
What about Subdivisions, Rush?
Well, Subdivisions, you know, I love that song. It was when in my teen years when it came out. And you know, it's about... it's about suburbia, and it's about, you know, conforming to, you know, this fake suburban environment. And when I was going into high school, my parents decided they owned a restaurant in Chicago, and they lived above the restaurant. It's probably where I get my, you know, never leaving work scenario mentality in my life. And they decided they sold it after 25 years, and they did the immigrant dream, right? They moved out to the suburbs.
Here we go.
I hated it, you know, and I decided I decided I would never ever want to live in a suburban environment again. You know, I'm a city guy. I'm going to live in a city, and that's what the song talks about. It talks about, you know, conforming to this suburban cookie cutter, you know, model. And, I don't know. It just spoke to me when I was a teenager. You probably hate that song.
I hate it. Yeah. But you know, some of this other stuff is okay. Let's say Allentown's tax base gains the kind of growth you're optimistic it does.
Mm-hmm.
What do you believe are the city's most demanding problems that are going to need those resources? I mean, how much of that money have you already got spent in your mind?
A lot. we're going to need those resources. I mean, you know, we were fortunate enough. We were one of only 80 cities to get some significant dollars through the COPS program. In fact, we got two grants totaling 20 officers, probably the most in Pennsylvania outside of Philadelphia. And those officers were paid for entirely, salaries and benefits for 3 years. But the goal of the COPS program is that you pick them up
sustain
after the three,
them, sure.
and you sustain those officers. So we have 20 additional COPS that in another year we're going to have to pick up those costs. So I was looking at those costs coming out. We have costs for infrastructure. We have needs for, you know, to fix our pools, which are like 50 years old. We have roads that need to be replaced. We have other bridges that need to be replaced. There's other economic development that, you know, we need to address. We need to address, you know, demolition of some blighted houses and properties within our neighborhoods. All of this stuff costs money. And now at the same time, we also have the highest tax rate in the entire Lehigh Valley. You know, we're the biggest urban area, but we have the poorest population. We have one of the highest tax rates. And so if we're going to be competitive and try to attract middle-class families back, we not only have to simultaneously affect the school system, create opportunities for employment, but also address this tax issue. And so what I've tried to do, realizing that we can't just reduce it to the surrounding suburbs. You know, I mean, you got Lower Macungie, which is now larger than the city of Easton, with almost no property tax.
Well,
you know?
No, literally no municipal property
no,
tax.
No, literally, you know, we can't compete with that, but we have to at least create a stable tax environment if we're going to create opportunities for those folks to want to relocate back in the city. And so for the last 7 years, we have not raised property taxes. And so what this will allow us to do is be able to pay for a lot of those services, those improvements, those infrastructures, those capital needs, without having to raise property taxes for at least another 3 to 4 years.
You know, I've talked about the home runs, and I recognize there's been plenty of small
ball.
If we
are going to raise the property tax, we're going to do it for major capital improvements that need to be made.
Right. You know, the water system, big-time home run. NIS, big-time home run. American Parkway, replacing Hanover Acres. You know, your park system, work you've done there. I mean you've got home run after home run. Do you have any more home runs up your sleeve? I mean, you're going to enter your third term, four-year term as mayor.
You have to stay tuned for that.
What else have you got? Okay, you're not talking. Huh?
No, I mean, listen, it's been a lot of hard work, and it's been a lot of effort, and it's been a lot of effort on not just my part, but a lot of folks. I mean, we got a really good staff at City Hall. I got some really sharp people working for me, and we have been able to, you know, after a lot of hard work and diligence, I mean, our tax rate, we haven't increased tax in 7 years. Our crime rate has gone down consistently for 6 years. We've been able to address, you know, the issue of infrastructure. We've also been able to address our pension problem. And we're bringing in over a billion dollars, hundreds of millions and billion dollars in new economic development. I think these are all, but that didn't just happen. We've laid the foundation over a period of, you know, of the last 6 to 7 years for that to come to fruition, and it's beginning to all take shape. You know, thankfully, knock on wood, it all happened simultaneously, and it's all coming together, all the pieces. And you have to look at a city when you're rebuilding it almost like a jigsaw puzzle. Every piece is important. You can't just leave a piece out because it doesn't create, you know, a solid picture, a solid tapestry. All these are different component pieces to the puzzle that all have to come together for, you know, a city to really rebuild itself, revitalize itself. And they're beginning to take shape. And I think people are now starting to see that picture emerge.
You may have heard this. There's this rumor going around that you have statewide office aspirations. It might be news to you. I read it on the bathroom wall around town. What you got in mind there, Ed?
Well, you know, I don't know. I've been getting a lot of calls from folks and people talking about, you know, that I should. Because of all the good things that are happening in Allentown, I should think about running, you know, statewide, maybe even running for governor. Right now, I'm focused on running for mayor.
I've heard that line before.
Yeah, have you?
Yeah, yeah. You hear it all the time from people who are positioning for bigger things.
You know, I don't know. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think there's, you know, I love my city. There's a lot of great things happening here. I also love my state. And I see not a lot of great things happening at the state. And, you know, for us, you know, I mean, let's take education, you know, for not only for Allentown, but for Bethlehem and Easton and every place. Let's think about a state. Do you realize we have 57 cities in this Commonwealth, 57 first, second, and third class cities? 47 of them are in fiscal distress.
Yeah.
27 are in what's called Act 47.
It's utterly irresponsible.
You know, we have 20 politics. More that are in this early intervention program from the yep. state because they're on the border of Act 47. We have now the poorest city in America, Reading, Pennsylvania, surpassing Flint, Michigan. And we have our capital city that's talking about going into Chapter 9 bankruptcy. This is not a good scenario yep. for the state of Pennsylvania.
It's terrible.
And something needs to be done
to
reverse
the score.
And the
governor's whistling past the graveyard.
Yeah,
you know?
And we got a school system in all of these urban areas that is dying, that's creating this great divide economically and educationally. And we, you know, we're one of the few states in the country that doesn't have a consistent educational funding formula. Unless those things get fixed, I don't know how we fix these urban problems that we're dealing with in not only Allentown, but in other cities across the Commonwealth.
When Bill Clinton was positioning himself to run for president in 92, the 1990 or so, the National Governors Association elected him chair of the Trade Association of Governors. Clearly, you would think that, you know, those governors knew that they were essentially supporting his candidacy by doing that because it gave him a new platform. You recently were elected chair or president of the Pennsylvania League of Cities and Municipalities. You know, I'm not so stupid to not understand that they had to be essentially endorsing your candidacy.
I don't know about that. I mean, you asked me that before offline. I'm very honored to be selected as president. You know, the way that it works in PLCM and in others is that you sort of work your way up through leadership, and you become, you know, second vice president, first vice president, president. And, you know, I'm honored to have been elected to each of those offices and now president. And, you know, serving cities across the Commonwealth. And I'm going to do whatever it needs to take to get our issues addressed.
So you're going to tell me when John Callahan became the head of the Pennsylvania League of Cities and Municipalities, a convenient year or so before he decided to run for Congress, that was pure coincidence, too.
I don't know.
I got him, folks. He doesn't have a response. Did you
yes,
get that, Otto?
Yes,
Otto?
I'm going to tell you that. I'm going to tell you that,
Otto
yes.
Bost is over there laughing, too. And,
yes,
and,
yes. Honestly, I would hope that my colleagues elected me because they saw a passion in me to represent them at the state level across the Commonwealth. Yeah, I would hope that. I would hope that that's the case. I'm assuming. You know, we got a good group. I mean, we got a good leadership group this year. It's myself as president, Michael Nutter as vice president, and Rick Ray of Lancaster as the second vice president.
You're a person of faith who takes that faith very seriously. I mean, a lot of people, I think, you know, go to resume churches and,
right.
You know, it's part of their shtick. It's part of their progress up the line. The church you attend is a relatively obscure one here in Bethlehem, I think, mm-hmm. New Covenant mm-hmm. Community Church.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, like me, a member of First Presbyterian Church of Allentown, which, by the way, I grew up in, so right. I have an excuse.
Which is a great church, by the way.
It is a great church. It takes its mission work very seriously. Your faith perspective is very strong. You and I have talked at some length. You've been very helpful to me in my personal life recently. Where do you get that? Were you raised?
No, that was that part of that epiphany moment that I talked about. You know, when I started to change the course of my life and realized that I needed to go in a different direction, my faith played a very important part in helping to ground me in a belief system that would really propel me in sort of a new direction within my life. And so, you know, you know, my faith is very important to me, and my faith in God is you know, forms a core belief system within my being that is critical for me. It helps me get through the day. You know, helps me to I think be a better father and a better husband, and. And helped me to really change a course and direction in my life that I felt was for the positive.
Some people think you are a minister. You're not an ordained minister.
I'm not. I did go to seminary. I went to Bible school for a number of years, and then I went back to school and got a master's in urban planning. But you know, again, that's what got me into organizing. You know, for me, that was an outgrowth of my faith. I wanted to make a difference. I wanted to I wanted to change the world. You know, I wanted to at least change the world around me. And my faith became an important component of that. And I originally wanted to ministry, and then I got into organizing, and then I actually, my first venture was with a coalition of churches where I thought that was when I think back on my life, that was a great sort of transition for me into the work I'm doing now, because it really gave me an opportunity to both express my faith and get into social activism. So, you know, my faith played an important role in sort of guiding and directing the course of my life. But really, it was an outgrowth of that desire to really want to make a difference and change the world around me.
One last quick question. You should be a White Sox fan if you're from the south side of Chicago.
I'm not. I'm actually originally from the north side. I just worked on the south side. So,
so you should be a Cubs fan.
Yeah.
If you were a smart politician, you'd declare yourself a Phillies fan.
Yeah, I'm a that Phillies yet? Fan, yeah.
Okay. And a Pirates fan if you're in the west western part of the state.
No, I'm a Phillies fan.
Last song coming up, Don't Give Up, Peter Gabriel's song. Very, very touching. I would endorse this song, its meaning.
It's meaning to me, you know, a couple years ago, you know, there came a point right out of my first term into my second term where, you know, it talks about an industrial city and talks about, you know, the fact that the factories are closing down and so forth. And it also talks about, you know, giving an inspirational message of don't give up. And I remember sitting in a car one day driving home from Harrisburg saying, is it all worth it? You know, I mean, is there
did
any...
Did you see the painted thing that says don't give up on the highway?
No,
I did that.
Did you?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, you know, and the song came on and I thought, wow, you know, it just touched me and it gave me sort of, you know, that inspiration that I needed at that point in my life to say, I'm going to keep pushing forward, even though, you know, there's a lot of negativity and there's a lot of naysayers. We're going to keep pushing forward.
We're out of time.
And obviously, it made a difference.
Ed Pulaski, thanks for joining us. That's it for Lehigh Valley Discourse. Peter Gabriel.
In this proud land, we grew up strong. We were wanted all along. I was taught to fight, taught to win. I never thought I could fail.
This is WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and HD.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. Closing arguments began today in the George Zimmerman case. Zimmerman, the Florida Neighborhood Watch volunteer, facing second-degree murder charges in connection with the shooting death of unarmed teen Trayvon Martin. Prosecutor Bernie De La Rionda claimed Zimmerman was profiling the 17-year-old black teen as he followed him through a gated community.
He, being the one that's tracking him or following him, he's on guard, he's got two flashlights, he's...